Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sean Carey alongside today. Sean?
Steve, great to be with you again. And before we really get into the show, I wanted to toss in a traffic trouble spot. We just picked this up from Jennifer Wakeman in the newsroom, and it involves a major highway here in the valley, Route 61, Market Street in Sunbury near Zimmerman's. We've been hearing from Northumberland County 911 that stretch of Route 61 is closed at this point because of a motor vehicle accident. So as soon as we get more in-depth info, of course, we'll pass it along here on the radio, and we'll post it too at WKOK.com. So once again, Route 61, Market Street near Sunbury, closed because of an accident.
All right, so we'll keep you up to date on that. And don't forget, Jim will have all the news at the bottom of the hour as well. Plenty to talk about today. The president on what has to be an interesting balancing act based on what happened in Brussels earlier today is at a baseball game today in Cuba. Sports has always been interesting, opening diplomatic doors or goodwill doors over the years. It's also been used as a lever in other ways. Jimmy Carter did not send the United States Olympic team to Moscow for the 80 Olympics after the invasion of Afghanistan. The Soviet Union countered in 1984 by not sending their team to the LA Olympics. It's also been used over the years to show societal superiority. At least it's been the mindset of those certain governments over the years. It's what Nazi Germany tried to do. It's what East Germany tried to do. It's what the Soviet Union tried to do. And it's currently what mainland China is attempting to do, showing the superiority through athletics. Now, but then what about the diplomatic side? Well, the diplomatic side has been important over the years. As I pointed out earlier, the opening to China where President Nixon went in 1972, what preceded that? Well, what preceded that happened to be ping pong between the United States and China. You're like, ping pong? Yeah, table tennis. And that was the first competition between the two in anything in a long time, but it was done in a friendly, diplomatic way, and then opened the door for President Nixon to go and meet Mao Zedong and to meet Zhou Enlai in what was then Peking, now Beijing. And you see in baseball, I mentioned the Penn State baseball team played down there in November right before Thanksgiving. They played four games. We're going to talk to Rob Cooper about that trip today and what the pros and cons of that trip that he got out of it from their point of view. And now you have the Tampa Bay Rays today playing against the Cuban national team with President Obama there. Significant. At the same time, we cannot be a completely naive society. We just can't sit there and go, hey, great, and not sit back and think about the road as to how we got here. You have to have some concept and semblance of history in order to understand what we're watching today. If you don't have that as a backdrop, you then end up saying ridiculous things or thinking ridiculous things as to what is and isn't happening, what the good and the bad happens to be. And that's where it's been important to have the perspective of people who have lived it, gone through it, and understand it. The Cuban-American population of this country is not very large, but the Cuban-American population of South Florida, and I mentioned Dan Lebatard's article in the Miami Herald yesterday, and we read parts of it, excerpts of it, and discussed it yesterday on the show. The Cuban-American population in South Florida, where he wrote that article, is highly significant. Nationally, not a big percentage. South Florida, big percentage. So it's just important to listen to those perspectives. And I know at some point this summer, I'm going to pull Johnny Rodriguez aside here, who's the manager of the State College Spikes, and just talk to him a little bit about it, because Johnny was born in Havana. And I'd like to get his perspective on this whole thing to kind of then give me a little more perspective on what should enter into my thought process as I watch all of this play out and not just do it in a naive, knee-jerk fashion. And as for the Rays, they're playing today against the Cuban national team. And I'm trying to see where that game is right now. I think it's on TV today, but still, I haven't had a chance to really tune in and watch it. And by the way, Penn State played in the same stadium. The Rays lead 1-0 in the bottom of the third in that game. So 1-0 in the bottom of the third inning. But at least it's a feel-good moment. The United States loves sports. The United States loves baseball. Cuba adores baseball. And there's certainly been now, 180-plus players that have played in the United States that are of Cuban descent. And so this has been at least a significant day in that regard. Again, sports plays a role to soften how people feel about a situation. That's something that's happened for a long time. It's not new. Sometimes it's used as a lever to promote your society. Sometimes it's used as a lever to promote your superiority, at least what you perceive it to be. And sometimes it's used as a lever in diplomacy. Well, this is one of those, especially with both sides are so passionate about. It's interesting. It's an interesting topic to discuss. And again, you need to discuss it without being naive. You can't be naive as you discuss things. You have to have some depth, as I've said many, many times on the show. There's a major difference between book smart and wisdom. It's really great when you have somebody that is book smart and has wisdom. That's really cool. That's a great combination. But sometimes they don't always go hand in hand. All right, 800-795-9565 is the number. Jamie Dixon leaves Pitt for TCU. Later on, we'll talk to Dan Zangrilli about how the Pirates are doing. A little bit later, too, Rob Cooper on the game in Cuba today, since Rob Cooper, Penn State's baseball coach, just took his team to Cuba no more than 4 months ago. So it's very fresh in their minds. They played in the same stadium that the Rays are playing today, as a matter of fact. So we'll get his perspective, pro and con, as to what he saw when they went down there and what it meant to the program to do it. They played 4 games in Havana. So we'll talk to Rob Cooper, the Penn State baseball coach, about that. The Jamie Dixon story leaving Pitt for TCU is quite interesting as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of different angles to look at that story. We'll talk about some of those angles in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sean, did you happen to catch a couple of the snippets of the Gruden camp with Christian Hackenberg?
Have not yet. Looking forward to it.
All right, they put a couple of snippets out there. It'll be interesting. You expect John Gruden to be interesting with Christian, and Christian and the snippets I watched handled himself really well. And by the way, Gruden was very positive with him, too. Gruden is not an overly critical guy when it comes to sitting down with them, and he talks with them. But I'll tell you, the single most interesting thing I saw was that they put up a graphic. And Christian Hackenberg in the last 3 years was number one in being sacked at 103 times. That wasn't the interesting part of the graphic. You want to know what the interesting part of the graphic happened to be?
Absolutely.
Who was number two? Cody Kessler of USC. Let's think for a moment. What has USC been going through? Oh, that's right. Sanctions limited to 75 scholarship players. Oh, that's right. Interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. I found that to be remarkably enlightening. I remember when it was the night Penn State beat Rutgers at Rutgers. They rallied. Christian hit a big pass to Geno Lewis. Bill Belton then scored on a 6-yard run. Penn State won the game 13-10, so it was September 2014. And I remember going back to the bus, because we're just going to bus back. Did we fly? I guess we flew back that night. Yeah, we flew back, and we decided to go up to Newark to fly out. But I went to the bus to go to the airport, and I was just sitting on the back of the bus alone, just waiting for the players to come in, staff, so forth. And the bus driver had the radio on. It was ESPN New York. And that same night, USC lost at Boston College. And I remember the two hosts were going on and on about, well, you know, USC only has the 75 scholarships. They only have 52 scholarship guys that made this trip. It really is a problem for them. I'm looking around saying to myself, do you make these same comments when it comes to Penn State? It's worse at Penn State. It's worse. So that brought it back full circle for me to see that Cody Kessler was number two in the last 3 years and being sacked at 100. Because, again, that makes the same dramatic statement. When you don't have the numbers, you have to make difficult calls in recruiting as to how many guys you can get at a particular position. And most schools that go through what Penn State's gone through, except not to the same extent, the area that suffers is usually the offensive line. USC, which has cranked out one tremendous offensive lineman after another over the years. I mean, it's been a staple of the first round of a USC offensive lineman. Guess which area their football team suffered when they would drop down to 75 scholarships? Offensive line. Guess who paid the price? Cody Kessler. And their record's about the same as Penn State over the same span. Just about the same. I think maybe one more win somewhere along the way. But something just to ponder and think about is more evidence that what we've been talking about here for a couple of years is a numbers situation far more than a coaching situation. You can't coach what you don't have. Coaches have to do a lot of different things. One is you have to be able to look at the strengths of your players and then play to their strengths. You can't do the square peg round hole thing. You just can't do it. Number two, you have to coach around your deficiencies. That's not easy to do at all. But you have to coach around your deficiencies. And sometimes it'd be, let's really make it simple for you. I have a great play. It's an awesome play. Sean and I sit down, we draw the play up, the whole deal. On paper, it's perfect. And we have one guy that can't run the play right. And no matter what we do, we can't get the one guy to run the play right. Guess what? We can't run the play. We can't. It's just the way it is. Then the other part is trust. Who do you trust? Who do you trust to make plays? Who do you trust to make the fewest mistakes? Who do you trust in key situations? Those are some things coaches have to do. Areas that aren't talked about very much. I think fitting to personnel is talked about a lot. Coaching around deficiencies is never talked about. And trust is never talked about. I don't really care which five guys start the basketball game. I'm always interested to see which five guys are in there the final 5 minutes of the basketball game. Because those are the five guys that they trust to swing it one way or the other for you. Don't ever get too hung up on who's starting. I always want to see the last 5 minutes who has earned the trust on that particular night to take it home. Jamie Dixon and TCU. I mentioned that going into the break. We're going to expand more on this as we go through it. 11 times in 13 years, he took Pitt to the NCAA tournament. Jamie Dixon got to the point at Pitt where it became like a Jay Wright story of Villanova. Well, he gets to the tournament every year, but he never gets to the Sweet 16. He gets to the tournament every year, but he never gets out of the opening weekend. He gets to the tournament every year, but he never gets to the Final Four. Oh, what a luxury it is to see that. Yeah, sometimes you take winning for granted. You take success for granted. And in some ways, Jamie Dixon had his success at Pitt taken for granted. He did a really good job. I remember in 2001 season, that 2001 Penn State basketball team could beat just about anybody. They beat second-ranked Michigan State. They beat North Carolina. They beat Providence. They won at Ohio State. They beat Hofstra, beat Princeton, beat Temple. They won at Kentucky. They beat Pitt that year, 88-74. I mean, they beat Pitt by 14 points here. And, in fact, the only two non-conference games Penn State lost all year, the only two they lost, were Temple in the Sweet 16 after they'd beaten them earlier. Temple in the Sweet 16 and NC State in the ACC deal. They played down at the PNC Bank Arena. And they could beat anybody. Well, Ben Howland was the coach of that Pitt team, and Jamie Dixon was an assistant on that team. And then when Ben Howland took the UCLA job, I sat back and went, geez, I don't know. We'll see. Because I didn't really know a lot about Jamie Dixon at that time. But he had Barry Rorison on the staff, who got promoted from director of basketball operations to the assistant coach's spot. And Barry Rorison had a tremendous pipeline into New York City. And they took advantage of it, and that's why they had several strong teams. But what's interesting is that over the years, the job at Pitt changed. What changed? The Big East left Pitt, and the ACC entered Pitt. On the surface, you would say, wow, we're in the ACC. That should help. And it's really interesting how that situation doesn't always help. Because you don't have a lot of basketball players in the state that grew up saying, I want to go to the ACC. Just like you don't have a lot of players in the state that grow up saying, I want to play in the Big Ten. Big East basketball really established and cemented itself up and down from the Mid-Atlantic to New England. We're going to talk more about that as we continue. Rob Cooper coming up. We'll talk to him about the Penn State baseball trip to Cuba in conjunction with Tampa Bay playing there today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 and Hummel's Wharf. Time now for This Day in Sports History. And probably when we do this segment a year from now, we're going to talk about Tampa Bay Rays playing in Cuba today with President Obama on hand. 1988, here we go, Sean, right up your alley. The English Football League was established. There you go.
The Premier League.
One of the truly great stories in sports is Leicester City. They have been in existence for 132 years. They have never won it. And in a league that has no salary cap, they are the Oakland A's. And they might win it. And you are shocked I even know any of this.
No, I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. I know that you impressed Kevin with just a little bit of soccer info here and there. Yeah, they just joined the top 20, the Group A of English soccer just last year. They left the relegation zone, and what a complete turnaround. I mean, they were cellar dwellers last year, and now they could be 2 months away from hoisting the trophy.
132 years. Never have won it. 1893, Northampton, Massachusetts. First women's collegiate basketball game played at Smith College. Let's see. Also on this date, 1923, Foster Hewitt used a telephone to broadcast the first hockey game. And Foster Hewitt, one of the great legends in the game. First Masters, Augusta, Georgia, this date, 1934. Eddie Johnston of the Bruins became the last goalie to play every minute of every game in a season in 1964. 1967, Muhammad Ali beat Zorro Foley and then was stripped of his heavyweight title for refusing to be inducted into the U.S. Army. 1969, UCLA beat Purdue, winning three straight NCAA titles. Some guy named Ferdinand Lewis Alcindor Jr., a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, led them to those three titles. Amazing. 1979, the NHL voted to accept four WHA teams, the Edmonton Oilers, the Winnipeg Jets, the Quebec Nordiques, and the Hartford Whalers. And let's see, 1994, the NFL announced the addition of the two-point conversion. All right, let's bring in Rob Cooper now, head baseball coach at Penn State. It's an historic day because the Tampa Bay Rays are playing this game today against the Cuban national team. The game is taking place in a stadium, Rob, that your team played in, as a matter of fact. And the Rays were winning the last we saw 1-0 in that game in the fourth inning of play. When you went, what were the positives you got out of from a baseball point of view, but also from an educational point of view for your players?
So we'll start first with kind of where it's helped us as a baseball program and on the field. And that's, you know, when you have 11 true freshmen like we did at that time, you know, you have guys that that need extra work, extra practices, and then, you know, you get down there and you get a chance to play, and you get a chance to play, you know, in kind of an, obviously in an uncomfortable situation. And what I mean by that is not playing at home in front of your fans.
Right.
I don't mean it was uncomfortable by anything other than that. So that part of it. And then also just the bonding by the players. They were already a fairly close group. They became very close down there. And so, you know, I know that really helped them, and it's helped us early. And, you know, that combined with our early season schedule and how tough of the teams that we played to this point, you know, last year at this time after 17 games, our record wasn't very good. Now, I'm not happy with 7-10, but there's a lot of improvement in there with a much younger team against a tougher schedule.
What did you learn about Cuba yourself that you didn't know before you made the trip, pro and con?
So, you know, I learned, first of all, that the people of Cuba were extremely welcoming to us being us as United States citizens, and the outreach, the love that they showed us, making us feel welcome, and then how prideful they are in their country and in themselves and in baseball. And so that was really, really big. I mean, you know, a con for me is just that it's such a proud country. It's such a beautiful country in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And you just see what the last 40 plus 50 years, it's still in a time warp because of, you know, all the things that have happened there. And so, you know, you see the smart, you know, proud people, and, you know, they're living on the most basic of necessities as possible. And what I mean by that is, you know, food and clothing and shelter. And so it's just, you know, obviously for me, I look at that as a con, and just, you know, I think, well, the freedoms and the things that we have here in the United States is something that I don't think any of us should take for granted. You know, but it was definitely an eye-opening experience for myself, for our coaches, and our players.
The average salary, yesterday, Raul Castro lectured President Obama about income inequality in the United States. The average Cuban makes approximately $300 per year. Again, I'll repeat that, $300 per year. When you threw baseballs into the crowd, what kind of reaction did your players get when they did that?
Well, normally when you play in Cuba, a baseball goes in the crowd, they throw it back because it's so expensive.
Right.
And so for us to be giving away baseballs, I mean, it was like gold. And we were actually even asked to a certain extent to stop doing that because it was almost, you know, too audacious, too gaudy for us to doing something like that. And, you know, one of the other things that, you know, you learn there is that, you know, the average Cuban, like you said, and the cost of living, I mean, you know, you'll have a brain surgeon, you'll have a doctor, you'll have, you know, somebody who has a job here that's making a lot of money.
Right.
You'll have a person there making, you know, who has that job that also has two other jobs to support their family. And so it's quite a huge difference in survival.
All right, but the weather's great though. What I want to ask you about the facility that you played in. I believe you played the same place the Rays are playing today. Correct?
Yes,
that's one of them.
Latino Americano Stadium.
But that was built a while ago. Did it look like it was brand new? Did it look like it needed a coat of paint? What did it look like?
You know, it definitely looked like it needed a facelift, but, you know, you can see the history in the stadium. You can see, you know, it's one of those places that, I mean, you know how it is. You've been lucky enough to travel around to some really cool places, and it's one of those places that you kind of walk in and you hear the ghosts and you feel the spirits there that have played there before you. And that's what it felt like. And so it's, you know, Sunday morning, obviously, we didn't play Sunday because we played a doubleheader on Saturday to try to hopefully beat the weather. And so I wake up Sunday morning and I'm able to watch the, you know, the outside the lines on Cuba and the game and everything. And so you see them over at the stadium getting it ready, and you're like, yeah, we were there. We played there. And it's a really neat stadium.
All right, your baseball team, you came off, you picked up two wins in the doubleheader. You mentioned that you moved the game up from Sunday because the weather was going to be so mediocre Sunday. What did you see in that doubleheader that really bolstered you?
Well, I got to be honest with you. So Friday night we lose a tough game, and it wasn't a game where you can really point to it and go, well, we made this error or we didn't do this. I mean, we left a lot of guys up base, and we need to be better offensively, but you know, Niagara, their record, and I know people think that when coaches say this, that it's just coach speak, but they played an unbelievable early season schedule, and so their record is not good, but they're a good team. And so it was a heck of a baseball game we lost, and I'm going home Friday night, and you can tell that our team's not in a great spot, you know, as far as, you know, confidence and everything. And our guys came out the next day and really just was – had great energy and made the choice to compete. And you know, so for our guys to turn around in such a short period of time and you know, less than 24 hours and have, and play eight innings of baseball and win after such a tough, hard, devastating loss the night before, I was really proud of them because I don't know if that happens in the past, Steve. And it's just a matter of them understanding that, you know, they can do it and don't have to be chained. You don't have to be chained down by the previous games in order to do well.
All right, so how do you want to handle the pitching today and then potentially tomorrow, Coop, because you start the Big Ten this weekend?
Well, we're going to start Nick Hedge today. You know, I think it's an example of, you know, the recruiting and being able to get some depth in here and some quality guys. You know, Nick Hedge is our Friday night guy, and now he hasn't done anything wrong. He's pitched well, and he's actually pitching on Tuesday. And so that shows you that we have a little more depth. But he's going to start today. We're not sure who we're going to start tomorrow yet. We're going to try to get through tonight with a win if we can, right, and do what we need necessary to do that. And then, you know, obviously we got to look at what's going on and not blow guys out because we do got to make sure that we're lined up and ready to go for Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Illinois. But, you know, we are 100% committed to trying to win tonight and tomorrow.
Well, how do you feel about the next two games that really set the tone for you going into Big Ten play?
I think if we can pick up where we left off on Saturday as far as our competitive spirit and really work at trying to get our guys, you know, more consistent with their competitive at-bats and good defense. We played really good defense Friday, and then we played good defense in game one Saturday. If we can just be more consistent all around, you know, competitive at-bats, better defense, better base running, and I like the way we pitch the ball, then I think, you know, we can continue to move forward. But that's the biggest thing.
All right. You practice all the time, and, of course, you've been playing all the time. Where do you feel your fundamentals are right now as a team? Every once in a while they can slip because every once in a while you get a little sloppy, a little lackadaisical. Any team goes through that. Where do you think your fundamentals are right now?
Well, I think that fundamentally on the mound, I like where we're at because I feel like even though maybe a guy's not as sharp, really, really competing and trying to, you know, to start bats and pitch on the attack as opposed to kind of feeling around for the ball and the pitch and everything. And, you know, for example, an example of that I mean is, you know, on Saturday, Justin Hageman hit two guys, but he was trying to go in. And, you know, our rationale is if you go in, miss him. And he did. And you know what? So it's one of those things where that's, you know, I can't fault him for that. So, I like where we're at pitching wise. We need to be more consistent defensively. We're giving away too many freebies, you know, in the infield and the outfield. And we're starting to have more quality at bats. And so I'd give us about a C-minus on that, but it was right. I didn't like where we were about a week ago, but we're still starting to make progress.
It was one of the worst things you can do is force a pitcher into four outs or five outs in an inning. I mean, that's one of the worst things you can do.
Well, no question, and you know, Saturday game two was a perfect example. We scored six runs in the first inning, and we didn't have a hit, and you know, they walked, I think, six guys in that inning, hit three. So, you know, that's what happens when you give, you know, a team more opportunities to score runs, and you know, you're just extending the game.
All right, the weather's at least turning for you.
Yeah,
I mean that's a big plus. How stretched out are your arms? You played a lot of games, but warmer weather stretches them out a little easier. How stretched out are you right now?
We like where we're at. I'm not a big, you know, that 100 pitch mark, 110, and that mark is kind of my benchmark for guys, and we're definitely there with guys, so we stretch them out. But we feel good with Jack Anderson and Dakota Forsythe, right, and some other guys in the bullpen. So you know, it's nice to know that we can have a guy like Justin Hageman. Justin Hageman went 94 pitches, and we got him out of there on Saturday because he had a good lead. There's no need to have him go any deeper.
One final question, and I'll let you go. We have four tickets to give away for the games coming up, by the way, for today and tomorrow. We're going to give away today's in just a few minutes. Jack Anderson, I know you use them in a variety of ways. How closely do you monitor how many pitches he warms up with during the week? Because obviously are pitches too.
Sure, absolutely. His is a little different than the normal guy because he is a submariner. I mean, it's straight underneath, and so those guys are a little bit different from the standpoint of, you know, if you had like Dakota Forsythe gets up and if he throws 40 pitches in the pen, those are legit 40 pitches,
right?
You know, and because it's harder for his arm to bounce back. But you know, we monitor how many pitches he throws in the pen. Both of them, we monitor how they do in the game. And then the biggest thing that I do with Jack is because of the way he throws, I'm constantly communicating with him. Hey, like, for example, we needed him for Friday night. We needed him for basically 2 1/3 inning on Saturday in game one. And I said to him, look, I said, I'm probably not inclined to use you in this game. You know, I don't want to overdo it. And he said, Coop, I'm good. Like, honestly, I feel good. My arm feels fresh. He's like, if you need me for an inning, you know, or two, I can do it. He is honestly really, really good about saying, hey, I can't.
All right. That's big. I mean, that's big. If he has the ability to tell you no, that's really important in your decision-making.
Yeah, and you know what? To be honest with you, we wouldn't have those conversations like that if he hasn't shown me and I don't trust that he's telling me the truth. Because you want every kid to say, no, coach, I'm good. I'm ready to go. Give me the ball. But, you know, I also want to make sure that I'm not putting those guys in jeopardy physically or anything like that. So, you know, he has done a really good job in my 3 years with him where, like, he's very honest. Like, hey, I'm good. I can go. I feel good. Or, you know what, I don't know. So, and if there's ever a question in my mind, we err on the side of caution.
I mean, there's big things when it comes to coaching. One is obviously making sure you take care of your strengths and you play to your strengths. Number two is working around your deficiencies. And number three, players earning your trust.
No question. I mean, look, you got to communicate with your guys. You got to be consistent with the communication because, look, you want them to trust you. And if you're constantly changing the way you do things, if you're constantly, you know, giving them one message but, you know, then doing another – like, they're not going to buy into it, and they're not going to buy into you. And then it makes it easier when the game's on the line to you know, if you make a mistake, to be like, well, here, you know, he doesn't buy into me anyway. So it's, you know, to me, it's the number one thing. There's got to be trust. It's got to be communication. And it doesn't happen overnight. Like, it doesn't.
Coop, good luck today. Appreciate the time and the insight very much.
Hey, Steve, no problem.
Appreciate it very much. 6:30 they'll play tonight, but I thought his perspective was well worth hearing on what they went through in Cuba just 3.5 months ago. Rays lead it 5-0, by the way. The president did do the wave today along with Raul Castro in the stands. You can't put a price on that. What about you doing the wave, Sean?
Not a good YouTube moment, no.
Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I had to laugh at the Wise Markets commercial, with the cute commercial about the Easter money. Did you see the story? You know, malls, of course, have Christmas Santas. And malls have Easter bunnies. You see the one in Jersey City, Sean? He got into a brawl with a parent. And now they're each facing assault charges. And I guess he was out there fighting while wearing the suit.
Even Easter bunnies can have a bad day.
At the Newport Mall in New Jersey. Man, you're the Easter Bunny. You can't be doing this.
Especially this time of year. This is prime time.
I mean, come on. It's not like you're out there dressed as the Tasmanian devil. I'd probably expect it. I saw that. I thought, oh my goodness, the world's becoming more bizarre by the minute. The Newport Center Mall in New Jersey. The Easter Bunny goes berserk. It's like when Ron Artest changed his name to Meta World Peace. I mean, you don't want to see something happen in the game. World peace gets violent. Not good. Oh, my goodness. All right. We're going to have more coming up. Dan Zangrilli talking about the Pirates situation as they break camp. A lot of Pirates fans in the Valley because, obviously, Root Sports is on the local cable. We're going to be your home proudly of the Philadelphia Phillies all season long. News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, did you see that Alfred Morris is going to stay in the division? He signed with the Dallas Cowboys. Okay. Morris gave the Redskins some pretty good mileage, I thought, as a power back. Not a small loss as far as I'm concerned. All right, second hour of the show coming up as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.